Welcome to the Analytics of Dynasty Daily Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan McNamara. And I was just preparing for the draft, and I just went back through and I read some Moneyball. And, of course, Moneyball, the book by Michael Lewis about the Oakland A's. And I just thought it's a pretty remarkable story. I figured I'd share it because I was listening to a podcast this week and it ties in. So it's about Billy Beane, the general manager of the Oakland Athletics. And it's basically about the stories about his tenure as the GM of the Oakland A's early on, but really goes through his life and about how he was this dominant baseball player on the level of like Daryl Strawberry as an incoming player, and I think we're in the same class, and and basically how he failed. And it was pretty interesting because just some of the narrative stuff. When he was a young man, Billy Beane could beat anyone at anything. He was so naturally superior to whomever he happened to be playing against in whatever sport they happened to be playing that he appeared to be in a different, easier game. By the time he was a sophomore in high school, Billy was the quarterback on the football team and the high scorer on the basketball team. He found talents in himself almost before his body was ready to exploit them. He could dunk a basketball before his hands were big enough to palm it. By the time he was 14, he was 6 inches taller than his father and doing things his father's books fails to describe. And that's talking about how his father bought like basically manuals to try and teach him how to play. As a freshman in high school, he was brought up by his coach over the angry objections of other players to pitch the last varsity game of the season. He threw a shutout with 10 strikeouts and went 2-for-4 at the plate. As a 15-year-old sophomore, he hit 500 in one of the toughest high school baseball leagues in the country. By his junior year, he was 6'4", 180 pounds, and still growing, and the high school diamond was infested with Major League scouts who watched him hit over 500 again. First game after Billy had come to the scouts' attention, Billy pitched a two-hitter, stole 4 bases, and hit 3 triples. And it goes on to basically talk about how he just kept hitting him over people's head. He encouraged strong feelings in the older men who were paid to imagine what kind of pro ball player a young man might become. The boy had a body you could dream of, ramrod straight and lean, but not so lean you couldn't imagine him filling him out. And that face, beneath an unruly mop of brown hair, the boy had the sharp features the scouts loved. Some of the scouts still believed they could tell by the structure of a young man's face not only his character but his future in pro ball. They had a phrase they used, the good face. Billy had the good face. His coach basically said, I got this first round draft pick and 15, 20 scouts showing up every time we scrimmage. And I don't even know what to do. I never played pro ball. He ends up becoming like one of the big-time high school baseball coaches in the country, and they would go on to produce 60 or so draft picks. The coach basically says that during that entire 22-year reign, basically, as a coach up until this point, he had never seen anyone of his caliber, of Billy Beane's caliber, and it was basically Billy Beane was the best. When the coach now thinks back, he should have done is to herd the scouts in the corner and tell them to just sit there until the time as they were called upon. What he did instead was whatever they wanted him to do. And what they wanted him to do was trot out his star for inspection. They'd asked to see Billy run. And the coach to have him run. They'd ask to see Billy throw. The coach have Billy proceed to the outfield and fire rockets to the coach at the plate. They want to see Billy hit. The coach would throw batting practice with no one there but Billy and the scouts. Me throwing the balls, Billy hitting, 20 big league scouts in the outfield shagging flies. The coach said, each time the scouts saw Billy, they saw only what they wanted to see, a future big league star. They missed all the clues. They didn't notice, for instance, that Billy's batting average dropped from over 500 in his junior year to just over 300 in his senior year. It's hard to say why. Maybe it was the pressure of the scouts. Maybe it was that the other teams found different ways to pitch him and Billy failed to adapt. Or maybe it was just plain bad luck. The point is, no one even noticed the drop-off. I never looked at a single statistic of Billy's, admits one of the scouts. It wouldn't have crossed my mind. Billy was a five-tool guy. He had it all. Roger Jungwirth, the Mets head scout, says. You have to understand, we don't just look at performance. We were looking at talent. But in Billy's case, talent was a mask. Things went so well for him so often that no one ever needed to worry about how he behaved when they didn't go well. The coach worried, though, but he lived with it. The moment Billy failed, he went looking for something to break. One time after Billy struck out, whacked an aluminum bat against the wall with such violence it bent it at a right angle. The next time up to the plate, he was so furious with himself that he insisted on hitting with a crooked bat. Another time he threw a tantrum, he was thrown off the team. You have some guys that when they strike out and come back to the bench, all the other guys move to the end of the bench. That was Billy, the coach said. When things did not go well for Billy on the playing field, a wall came down between him and his talent, and he didn't know any other way through the wall than to try and smash a hole in it. It wasn't merely that he didn't like to fail. It was that he didn't know how to fail. The scouts never considered this. By the end of Billy's senior year, the only question they had about Billy is, can I get him? And as the 1980 Major League draft approached, they were given reason to think not. It goes through basically all the ways in which all the machinations of that. There are good guys and there are premium guys, says Jungwirth. And Billy was a premium guy. He had the size, the speed, the arm, the whole package. He could play other sports. He was a true athlete. And then on top of all that, he had the good grades in school and he was going out with all the prettiest girls. He had the charm. He could have been anything. So I was listening to a podcast today. Adam Schefter was interviewing Urban Meyer, and they're basically talking about a coronation of Trevor Lawrence without saying that Trevor Lawrence is going to be the first overall pick. And in it, I thought it was really fascinating because Adam Schefter asks Urban Meyer, this is what stood out about him when you were meeting with Trevor Lawrence. And he says his sincerity. And this is not direct quotes. This is basically me paraphrasing, but this is, you know, it's basically what he says. His sincerity. All he talks about is winning and getting better. Faith and family are what his life is about. He gets married and his teammates all are there. He's respected by his teammates and focused on life. It's refreshing, is what Urban Meyer says. He gets it. It's time tested. He beats out the starter for the job. Then he beats Alabama in the national championship. Didn't win it again, but gets there. Urban Meyer basically raves about his family. Looks forward to meeting his family. Everything is in line, and that is not by accident. I just can't, as you look at the Trevor Lawrence stats, and this isn't even really about Trevor Lawrence, or meant to be a hit piece on Trevor Lawrence, really. This is about there are holes in his game and that there are limitations. And I think, you know, Matt Waldman put this really well when he says, if you are using the generational Andrew Luck level quarterback as a meaning that he's perfect, well, then you're wrong. You know, if you're using it as an understanding that, he's basically the best that we've had and a generation or, you know, in like a decade, then you got it right. And that there is stuff that, you know, he doesn't do well. And that some of that stuff shows up on tape. Some of it shows up in the numbers. And to me, it's really interesting when you sort of comp these things. Like this whole scouting stuff hasn't changed. It hasn't changed. And we see it with Justin Fields. A couple of years ago, it was the Sam Darnold face thing. Last year, it was couple years ago, it was the Josh Rosen, he wants to be an investment banker thing, with the clear, stereotypes that go along with his faith and his upbringing. And now it's the Justin Fields slander. And it's really interesting. And so I just, as I sit here and I'm reflecting on this whole draft process, and how, when you look at quarterbacks and when you look at top 10 performers, right, those franchise guys, how many teams get it wrong? And this isn't even about the order in which they select them. Someone put out on Twitter just today, as I'm recording this, about basically, Kyle Shanahan passed on the opportunity to select Deshaun Watson or Patrick Mahomes with the hope that he would get Kirk Cousins the next year. And then that didn't work out. And it's, and then he basically brings in Jimmy Garoppolo, and then, and now he forks over 3 first-round picks to go up and potentially get Mac Jones, right, or whoever it's going to be. And people talk about the Mitchell Trubisky pick, right, and that, oh, Chicago really screwed it up, or Mitchell Trubisky really screwed it, they screwed up and taken Mitchell Trubisky instead of Watson or instead of Mahomes. There's 9 other teams up there that passed on those 2 guys too, right? And they passed on Mahomes and they passed on Watson. And there's actually even more than that, because teams traded out instead of taking them, the Bills included. And it's just really interesting when you sort of look at this all, and you sort of hear some of the talk about these prospects. And when you hear the talk about, that it's focused on, the quality of Trevor Lawrence's family. I don't know what's going on with Justin Fields. And I don't know Justin Fields' family from Adam, but it's curious, right? And I do, there have been, there's been plenty of people talking, and I heard, I heard John Pack talk, and I heard Kurt Warner talk, and I heard there was somebody else that was recently talking about it. That these guys do get treated differently. And I think it was John Beck who's really interesting in terms of some of his backstory. There's a podcast where he did recently, I think it was PFF, and basically talking about his whole story. And no, it was actually with The Athletic. He did an appearance on the GM show for The Athletic, and he was talking with actually the GM that drafted him, is that Randy Mueller, as the host or one of the co-hosts of that podcast. And they were talking about basically the whole process and basically how he failed. Right. But now he's a coach, he's one of these like concierge coaches, basically a developmental coach for these quarterbacks. And just some of the stuff about that he was talking about, how, about how just the different words that are used for the black quarterbacks, some of whom were his clients. And he represents Zach Wilson too, or, coaches Zach Wilson. I don't know if he technically represents him, but it's really interesting. Like when you listen to some of these guys and their take on it, the stuff pops up, right? And this whole, the good face thing and the married, and he's got a good family, and, that's basically where success comes from in the NFL. I don't know. Like when you sort of look at the numbers, did Trevor Lawrence get better? Yes. Did Trevor Lawrence get elite in anything in college? No. Was Justin Fields better than him across every measure? Yes. and it's funny that when you look at that Justin Fields outplayed him on the biggest stage, in the same game, and for some reason, they're taking out these narratives, and I don't know what it is. There's total randomness about it, and I was sort of bemoaning this in the Analytics of Dynasty group me chat. Basically, how do we sort of deal with we're clearly different than what NFL teams are doing with the quarterback position, right? We clearly, and I say we, I mean the dynasty community, the football Twitter community, you know, some of the people observing from afar, all the metrics, like all of those things all suggest that Justin Fields is an elite prospect. And there's stuff going on that I can't quite get to. And I don't know why that is. You know, I know some of it is some of the offense that he ran, and it just looked different. But when you sort of look at some of the stuff that Trevor Lawrence's comps, like an outrageous number, he's in the top 10% of quick throws in terms of like the percentage of his throws that are under 2.5 seconds. The comps for those guys have not been successful. And then when you sort of look at the flip side, it's like, well, and the reason for that stuff for Lawrence being so fast isn't quick processing. It's scheme, right? It's RPO action. It's screen action. It's all that stuff. Whereas when you sort of look at what Fields does, it's different, right? The offensive structure is different. And he's getting docked and saying he's a slow processor, where, you know, Lawrence is this brilliant processor, when what they're being asked to do is totally different. The option routes that Fields is throwing are 10 yards down the field. The option routes that Lawrence are throwing are 2 yards down the field. And that's why these numbers show up. And so I don't know. This isn't to say that I know better than the NFL. They clearly have more information than I do. And this could be, you know, for all we know, you know, and I don't, you know, for all we know, there's something truly there, right? I mean, you know, for the reasons that Josh Allen fell, right? I didn't think that he deserved to go as high as he did. And the NFL was certainly wrong about his development. You know, for the reasons that Josh Rosen fell, they were right. And were they truly successful on that, or was it random? Right? Was there any predictiveness there? Was that good process, or was it just that happened to be what the outcome did, so it looks good on paper? I'm not sure. You know, Haskins falls. Is that were the narratives that were driven about him, were those right? You know, it turns out in hindsight they were. Was it fair to him? I'm not sure. I don't know. I don't know what the information that they're dealing with was. You know, with Lamar Jackson, right? He can't process. He can't do all these things. And I have questions about him as a passer for sure. But, you know, some of the, you know, he's a receiver stuff. I don't know. It's really interesting when you sort of look back on it. And I guess all of that is to say that these guys that have fallen, you know, Mahomes fell because he couldn't process, you know, Watson, because he played too out of structure. I don't know. Like, the NFL hasn't proven to get these decisions very right. And when you sort of read this stuff, or when you listen to this, you know, the Sam Darnold face thing, or the, like, this stuff hasn't gone away. The scene from Moneyball, the movie, when they're in the boiler room, right? It happens in the book too. And, you know, they're in the scout, you know, in the room, and they're talking about, you know, his girlfriend's, he's got a pretty girlfriend. So, you know, that, like, he's got confidence and all that, like, whatever the hell that means. Yeah, I just, it's like, that stuff hasn't gone away. That's very clear this week, this month, this year, with guys like Justin Fields, and some of the stuff, you know, him and, you know, the Mac Jones, the processing speed, all that stuff, right? The JT O'Sullivan, the quarterback school, he has his saying on the quarterback processing is, you know, why does Mac Jones process things faster than Justin Fields? Well, it's because he's got a better PR staff on his processing speed, right? Like, it's his that process, you know, that processing PR has gotten out there. And yeah, I sort of listen to some of these narratives, and it's no wonder that they get it wrong. It's no wonder that they get it wrong. And you know, and to some of these guys, it's not fair. And you know, I think for us as dynasty players, I think we have to take, you know, with it a certain amount of grain of salt, right? And we sort of, and this is one of the things that I'm really striving to make sure that I'm really thinking through and thinking hard about and giving advice, which is that these guys perform randomly in the top 10. And is this a situation that, is this the year you follow the rule? Or is Trevor Lawrence the exception to that rule? And if he turns out to be the exception to the rule, should we have known that sort of because of this whole process, or does that just turn out to be kind of random? And, you know, that's the thing with this stuff that, you know, the more I see this stuff, give me two shots instead of one, because these guys, the NFL has not proven to be particularly successful in terms of the order in which they put these things in, you know, put these quarterbacks in and the decisions that they make and the reasons why they're making them. And I sort of root on Justin Fields with the hope that, you know, that he does well, and that this whole nonsense about him is not true. And it's, you know, that he turns out to be, you know, the guy that we all think that he is, and the guy that I turned on the semifinals and said, which guy's the number one pick in the draft? Because one of them was the dude and the other one was on the losing side of that battle. And, you know, was the toughest guy. I mean, the shot that he took and came back and played through and led his team. I mean, that's some stuff that, I don't know, you know, he didn't walk away from that. And all the stuff about, you know, that all the off-field stuff, you know, I was listening to someone, I think it was, might've been McShay. It was somebody of note, maybe Daniel Jeremiah or McShay. But they basically said all the negative stuff from him is coming out of Georgia. And I'm not sure what that tells you about the reasons why he left Georgia, which, you know, there was some stuff going on about campus that made him uncomfortable, as from what I gathered from it. You know, and heck, they chose to start Jake Fromm and over him. And they chose Jake Fromm over Jacob Eason. And some of the reasons, you know, there was some of the racial stuff that happened there. And lo and behold, after, you know, that was some of the rationale that he used and that he cited in why he was leaving. And when, like, Fromm comes out, like, hey, not for nothing, like, there's some prior statements and there's some stuff about him that comes out that's not you know, that doesn't necessarily change that narrative. And you know, I don't know what's right, and this isn't meant to slander anybody or Jake Fromm for that matter or anything, but now you sort of hear that the negative stuff from him is coming out of Georgia. Man, that's really interesting, right? That's really, really interesting. And so, yeah, that's with this whole thing. This process seems, I'm not going to say it's broken, but it doesn't seem to perform particularly well. Some of the information that came out when he transferred was from some stuff that, some frankly nasty stuff that happened at Georgia. Reportedly, a baseball player from the Georgia baseball team was heard using inappropriate language towards towards Fields during a game. There were several social media posts detailing the alleged epithets tossed at the Georgia at Fields during that time. And you know, they were yelling from the sideline, about the worst racial words you could use about someone that's black. I'll just leave it at that. And now we sort of get back that some of the negative stuff from him, you know, about him is coming out of that Georgia program. I mean, I don't know. I really, really root for that everything that is being said about Justin Fields is wrong, and that, you know, that dude that we saw in the semifinals is legit and all that stuff. You know, some of the stuff that we don't know if there's truth and stuff there. You know, we didn't know, for example, that Aaron Hernandez, all his background and all that stuff. There's just stuff we won't know about these guys. But I just hope that, you know, that this process treated him unfairly. And, you know, I hope for all of those reasons that he is as legit as he looked in that semifinal game and throughout his entire college career. And, you know, and you just sort of look back at some of the stuff and you say, you know, if that's the framing reference on which Justin Fields' his career began, And then he's graded against, you know, the good family quality. And I don't know Justin Fields' family from anyone, but, you know, that's what he dealt with. And that's the stuff that he went through. And it's just really interesting that the framing of how Trevor Lawrence is being talked about is just so much different. So again, this isn't against Justin. This isn't against Trevor Lawrence. I just think that when you sort of look at this whole process, it's really illuminating, and some of the stuff from Moneyball is held true. So unfortunately, but all right, well, that's the you know, so all that said, from a dynasty takeaway perspective, give me the, I hope Justin Fields falls in the draft, and I hope he goes to someplace like Carolina or Denver. And honestly, I don't think it's going to change his dynasty value. I think he's going to be I'd be really surprised, outside of Trey Lance landing in San Francisco, I'd be very surprised if Justin Fields is not the quarterback two in this class. And, you know, then the question becomes is, how much do we trust all this stuff? And, you know, given the context of it, if he's a top 10 guy, top 10, top 12 guy, something like that, you know, unless he falls way out of the draft, that'd be a whole different story. But I'm pretty bullish on him. You know, we'll see how this whole top 10 finishes out and you know, about how we put the board together. But all right, well, that'll do it for this episode. Till next time, continue to embrace the variance. We'll talk again very soon.